Are you ready for this, Cards fans? Llewellyn Summer Sweeps is officially in full swing. Now through Labor Day, come into any Llewellyn's location, order the special of the day for your chance to win a trip for two to Cardinals Spring Training with Inside STL and 12 other amazing prizes. The more you go, the more chances to win. Visit Llewellynspub.com for more details or follow them on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter for updates. With tons of TVs and patios at almost all their locations, Llewellyn's Pub should be your place for games this summer. So go watch, eat, and enter to win.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
So Ryan Kelly Morning After, CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, InsideSTL.com, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios, fresh off the Acorns Golf Link, 7 o'clock hour. Into the 8 o'clock hour with Will Leach joining us from the Republican National Convention at 8:30, Isaac Bruce at 9 o'clock, and the special, Jill Cassidy, coming your way, Doug, at 9:20. If there are any questions you want me to ask her...
I can't think of anything.
Let me know.
Do her parents know? I guess that would be the first question.
Okay.
What do they think? Be another question.
It is picking up steam that Hillary Clinton is going to pick Tim Kaine. Now, you think that's Tim Kaczynski. It's not. Tim Kaine.
Tim Kaine is who I'm not familiar.
He is a senator from Virginia.
What do we know about him, Tim?
Let's see. Jerry Kilgore, I read from Richmond.com, Doug.
Okay.
Jerry Kilgore became an expert on Tim Kaine the hard way. He lost to him for Virginia governor. Kilgore was the Republican nominee in 2005. His party was intent on proving that the election of a Democrat 4 years earlier was an aberration inconsistent with the state's long Republican trajectory. Kilgore's defeat showed otherwise, underscoring Virginia's increasing competitiveness as a multi-hued suburban dynamo. Oh, I like that. Multi-hued suburban dynamo.
Okay, I don't care for that.
And Kaine's skill in harsoning it. Fast forward 11 years, Kaine is the state's junior U.S. senator, and for the second time since 2008, a finalist for the vice presidential nomination. Should he be selected by Hillary Clinton, it's likely that Kilgore's phone will be ringing a lot with Republican operatives and political reporters looking for skinny on the guy who would be the first Virginian selected by a major party for the vice presidency since...
Say the question again. I was reading something about him.
He would be the first Virginian selected by a major party for the vice presidency since?
Virginia. Thomas Jefferson was from Virginia.
That's right.
I can't think of many other Virginians.
John Tyler.
Yeah, it's going back a ways.
1840. Kilgore has a warning about Kaine, particularly for Republicans whose first instinct might be to see him as a smooth-talking, standard-brand, big-government, tax-raising liberal. Though there's much in the Democrats' record to support that, he's a great debater. He's a great speaker. That's where they have to be careful. He comes across as less threatening as a moderate. Since breaking into elective politics in 1994, Kaine has never been defeated. Wow. Mayweather.
And you know where he went to college? Mizzou.
Did you really?
And he was
economics from the University of Missouri in 1979.
What boy frat was he in?
It doesn't say that, but then he went on to Harvard Law School afterwards.
No, so he wasn't a Sigma Chi. We can cross that off the list.
Doubtful that he was Sigma Nu. I would have known him if Sigma Nu was there at the same time I was.
How big he would have hazed his balls off.
I wouldn't.
How big of an impact does a VP choice have in your opinion?
Let's look at it this way, boys.
All right,
Let's workshop it. And if we can we work off of 84 moving forward? Because I don't really remember the 1980 election. So 84 going forward, because Walter Mondale selected the first female vice presidential nominee of the two major parties with Geraldine Ferraro. 88, the challenger to Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush was, do you remember? Nurse, Nancy, Chasey, Lane? Lloyd Benson, and he had the line with Dan Quayle.
Oh, that's right. I know John Kennedy. You, sir, are no John Kennedy. Something like that.
Yes, that's right. 92, Al Gore. 96.
He was a little stiff back then.
96, Jack Kemp.
Yeah, he had a great football player. He had a lousy voice. His voice was very thin. He got to talk like that. That hurt him.
2000.
2000, this is what?
This is the Bush, party that didn't win. It was Bush-Cheney, but...
Dukakis? Is that who we ran
2000.
Against? Oh. I even forget who we ran against.
Bush v. Gore. Supreme
Gore,
Court case.
Yeah, Gore. Yeah, Gore's running mate. Oh, yeah. Boy, did he ever pick a heck of a running mate.
Goes unsaid.
Yeah. I think we all know who he picked. And if I were to say it, I think it would just be insulting the intelligence.
I think he sponsored the WWE recap once
could
or twice.
Can I have initials?
Lieberman.
Please?
Joe Lieberman.
Oh, that Joey. Yep.
Is he a Republican? Is he a Democrat? What is he?
Jim Hayes Enterprises.
He is. Good earner.
Yeah.
2004, John Kerry selected.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah, you're talking about Kerry. I think we know the mistake that he made. Can I have initials, please?
J.E.
J.E. John Ehrlichman. No, that was a Nixon guy.
The cat, do you know?
J.E.
Honestly,
J.E.
I'm so tired this week. I came to work yesterday without a belt on. I forgot a belt.
J.E. Can I
have the second letter of the first name?
Oh.
John Edwards.
Yes!
He had some issues behind the scenes.
Give me an example of 40.
He had some issues behind the scenes.
2008 was the delightful Sarah Palin. 2012 was Paul Ryan, and that is your vice presidential.
I think the only time it really mattered was when it was Palin. It worked against them. I think people thought, really? This person is a heartbeat away from the presidency, and the guy running's already 70-something? And people thought, this could be our president? I don't think so.
Yeah,
I
think, and any others stand out to you one way or the other? I mean, Ferraro and Mondale didn't have a chance.
Right.
I think you can hurt yourself with vice president.
Dukakis and Benson didn't have a chance. I think they only carried Massachusetts, where Dukakis was governor, and maybe the District of Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Something like
Dukakis
that.
didn't have the it factor, especially in a tank.
Well, he had the helmet on, though.
That's when your own campaign ads work against you.
Mm-hmm. Tim Kaine is Jesuit proud, a Rockhurst High grad. How about that, Doug? He's a Hawklet.
Hawklet, all right. But we don't know what fraternity he was in.
A lot of Rockhurst guys were Sigma Chi's.
Were they?
Yeah.
Maybe he was there. I don't remember him at Sigma Nu, so I'm sure he wasn't one of those. He was not a snake.
I mean, if he's going to be vice president, my stereotype of Missouri fraternities would be he was a Beta. Beta's kind of the St. Louis U High of... Missouri fraternities.
Yeah, kind of.
But I don't know. Maybe he was on East Campus smoking a lot of chronic. I don't know.
I doubt it.
Why would you even put that out there then?
If he went to Harvard Law School, I doubt he was on East Campus smoking.
You know, you are a Trump guy. You're already putting out your smear campaign.
Absolutely. Doug, I love you and I get it. Victor hurt you, but one bad Mexican man don't spoil the whole bunch, girl. Thanks. That's from Injun Joe's Cave Ride Magic Man.
What's that about?
One bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch, girl.
An apple. He said a Mexican man.
How is Victor?
Where'd that come from?
You Facebook with
him? I haven't seen Victor since I went down there last May, a year ago.
You don't keep in touch on the Facebook?
No, I don't. No. He's probably not even there. It was just a little summer gig for him. He was from Mexico City.
Was he?
So he was a long
way. What about Juarez?
He wasn't from Juarez.
But you guys got
Mexico City.
You guys got close real quick. You were, it was like a quick, relationship laden with emotion, right. Then you're done. You go.
No, there was
no
relationship there. He was just he was like the bellhop.
But he performed West Side Story too.
Yes, he was in charge of the pool games, and he also did some dancing when the entertainment came around.
Quite a slow dancer, though. You said he is a very good
slow dancer. No, he barely spoke English.
Did he ever say to you, "No habla inglés"?
No, he didn't.
I occasionally have that conversation when I'm in my Uber. In Miami. The cat, you'll get to experience that next week, and I might be down there with you.
Well, that will be great. You can come to the ballpark, hang around with me, and show
There's
me
how to do the journaling. There's a lot of atmosphere in there. There's a lot of atmosphere.
It's not gaudy at all.
Once Victor was right there, and I pointed to my friend who was there with us, and I said, "Este muchacho es un fat ass." And Victor says to me, "You speak Spanish?" I said, "No, that's the only line I could come up with."
Oh, I bet there was a sparkle in his eye, sir.
Hey, honey, let's see the show tonight. What is it? It's West Side Story. Let's go. It'll be really good. I'll bet it'll be fun. Let's just go to dinner and maybe walk on the beach. You know, or you see the show, and you walk in, and the lead, Tony, is the guy that brought your bags in.
Right.
Doug Buck Swope says Dukakis won 10 states.
Okay.
Buck Swope, show historian,
McGovern.
And also presidential historian.
McGovern won one, right?
Didn't Mondale only win Minnesota?
Maybe. I think McGovern won Massachusetts and didn't win his own state of South Dakota.
You think there's a chance that it could be a landslide election one way or the other?
I don't think so.
Kurt Schilling said landslide for Trump, obviously.
Well, I mean, I guess it's important if we're going to do this to define what a landslide would be. Would you consider 2012 a landslide?
Yeah.
Would you? Okay. Yeah. All right. So your definition of landslide is different than mine. So if that's the case, then I think that's
convincing,
possible.
A convincing victory. Yeah.
I mean, because you know there are certain states already out of the game. You won't have what happened in 84 or 88, for example, take place. You know that going in, because you know there are certain states that are going blue and certain states that are going red, and that's that. The question marks are Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania. And I know a lot about Pennsylvania, Florida. And it's great.
Florida also.
I'm not saying I would vote.
I'd be surprised if Florida.
I just think the Democrats are better at this game than the Republicans, and that's why they
give me an example of 30 things over the last 72 hours.
I just think they're better at controlling the message. I do think they have a partisan media that that focuses on the better stuff for the Democrats, the worse stuff for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans are just not good at a lot of things. So I think Hillary will win.
I don't know how many people are really swayed by what happens at a convention. You think there's some people...
I'm not talking about the convention. No, honestly, I watched the little bit, and they're talking about these great speeches. I see the cutaways. It looks like most of the people in the room could care less. Hey, you think they have caramel corn here? I saw a guy with caramel corn.
Well, they've been sitting there for hours. You see that at the Cardinal game, too.
No, but I think little things that'll crop up as we get closer to the election and the news cycle are important, and I do think that most of the media is pro-Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
I do believe that.
Yeah, I do, too.
Ted Cruz is addressing Texas delegates right now. It's not going well. This is being carried live on CNN. A Texas delegate just asked Ted Cruz who he will vote for in November. He repeats, he's, quote, watching and listening. Isn't that what John Mozeliak said one time?
Learning.
Just listening and learning.
Learning,
that's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. See, I haven't honestly nailed down what I'm going to do yet. Because
I used to not believe you, and now I actually believe you.
No, it's true. It's true. I really honestly don't know. I would say I'm leaning toward Trump just because I keep getting back to the Supreme Court. I don't really like either one of them at all. But there is something to be said for waiting and seeing how things unfold before you decide I'm supporting this person. But if you are Ted Cruz and you're... You know, an important guy in the Republican Party, and you did sign that pledge. I do think you have some...
I wonder about that. That's something I wanted to ask you guys, because I do find this to be a fascinating element of it. And I was watching, who was it last night? I guess Wolf Blitzer and Jake Tapper and I think Dana Bash on CNN, and they were discussing it. And Tapper, because he brought this up, and I go, where the hell is he going with this? He goes, Jackie Robinson was a Republican. And I'm like, Missouri, great football team. I mean, where in the hell is this coming from? And he said, in 1964, Jackie Robinson went to the Republican National Convention in San Francisco. And throughout the course of the entire Republican campaign, of which I know absolutely nothing about outside of, you remember who ran in 64 against
Goldwater
LBJ? Barry Goldwater.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole campaign, apparently it was pretty heated. I guess as heated as it could get in 64, and I have no idea what the case would be. The country, you know, in a period of mourning still from November 63. And Jackie Robinson said he was very disappointed that throughout the entire campaign, it was pretty heated for 64. And I think he wrote this in his autobiography, Tapper was saying. And I know a lot of people have read Jackie Robinson's biography, so maybe you remember this. And he said he was really disappointed in a major way when all of the candidates endorsed Goldwater after they talked about how he was unacceptable for the country throughout the primary process. And so, for some people, I think Ted Cruz doing what he did, they say, well, at least he's a man of integrity. Now, the other side of that, if you want to continue to play out the hand, is, well, he signed the pledge, so therefore he is not a man of integrity. And then if you want to play it out another step, you could say, okay, you're not going to endorse him like Kasich, like Rubio, like Bush, like Fiorina, but they didn't show up on the stage live. So where are you on that? Because I do find that to be, you know, for example, Paul Ryan, who's a guy that I do think to be a man of integrity. And maybe I'm wrong. Again, these are my totally abstract reads, which may be unfair, and people are more than welcome to text in and tell me whatever they want. It's fine. It's not going to change my mind. These are intuitive. You know, he is, I think, reluctantly falling in line, so to speak.
Well, he kind of has to also.
But I understand. But you would also say the guy who is...
But here's the difference with Cruz. You know, speaking
at the convention.
You got in bed with this group. You know, you wanted to be president. I get that. And I believe Cruz thinks he's doing it. I don't have a real problem with Ted Cruz. I disagree with some of his policies. But don't go then. Because the truth is Trump let him on the stage thinking it was better for unity, which I thought for Donald Trump was a surprising move. And I don't think... I don't think Cruz held up his end of the bargain. So, yeah, you can be a man of integrity. You can do it by not going. You know, it seemed to me that Cruz was a little self-serving with what he did.
I think all that happened there was Cruz ruined his own career. I don't think he'll ever be a viable candidate again, probably because of that.
And he could have just stayed
away. There won't be anybody who said, that's it. I'm not voting for Trump now because of what Ted Cruz said. There won't be anybody thinking that. It'll be long forgotten.
And then the other thing about it, and Christie said this, and I can't recall who the other former candidate, maybe it was Scott Walker, said this, but I saw Christie for certainly played Chris Christie's comments, was that it was cute. And by that, because I'm going, what the hell do you mean by cute? Like, I'm cute. Dug your ass. Cute. You know, Ted Cruz, cute, what do they mean by that? And it was that he wouldn't say what he meant, but he was kind of like a you know, angry 20-something blogger on Twitter, you know, dropping shade. Mm-hmm. Except he's I don't know how old I would gather. He's around 50. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way.
But he didn't directly say it. Right. Vote your conscience, you know. And then Hillary Clinton tweets out a few minutes later, yes, vote your conscience, because she knew what it meant. Everybody else knew what it meant. And therefore, so if he's really courageous...
No.
Why be cute, as they say?
Yeah, I don't really think he's courageous.
Well, that's what Amanda Carpenter, who is a Cruz supporter on CNN, that's what her whole take was afterwards, and then that got heated with the Trump supporters.
I don't see how it's courageous.
That he is not going to support somebody that he believes
to be. Okay, then don't support. But, I mean, if you are a Republican, you don't have to go to the convention where apparently... there was, you know, a hand reached out to you to let you speak, and then start stabbing folks in the back with shade without coming out and saying it. And what did you say about Paul Ryan? I agree that I think he's a good man. I think he's a guy who wants to compromise, you know, who has principles but is willing to go across the aisle. But if you lose a debate to Joe Biden and got whooped up and you're supposedly the smartest guy in the room... that damaged him to me, long-term view of
him.
Is
that right? Interesting. Yeah. Was he viewed to have lost that debate badly? I don't recall, honestly.
I don't know how others viewed it, but I thought if I was scoring the fight, it was decisively for Biden, and I never would have guessed it would have ended that way.
Mm-hmm. Guys, Cruz is playing the long game, positioning himself as the candidate who didn't throw himself behind Trump in 2016, and assuming Trump 2016 is going to be a disaster. See, that's what I thought it would be.
Except I think strategically it's a bad move because everyone's going to look at him getting booed off the stage. Someone told me, I think there was a misunderstanding. A lot of people were going Cruz, but the audio I heard, it was a lot of boos. It was obviously he was booed off the stage. And I think that damages him within the party. Even if you don't disagree with his stand against Trump, you can't be a team player, and I think within that party, it's going to be hard to come back from that.
Good for Ted. We need more people to follow their conscience instead of their party allegiance, and I think this will work out better for him in the long run. Trump will be remembered as a psychopath, and Cruz will be on the right side of history. That's from the 314. The 314. Make no mistake, Cruz is doing this for himself. That's why people hate him on all sides of the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
That's from Armin Kitten.
Armin Kitten?
Yep, A-R-M-O-N. That's how you pronounce Armin.
I think we've probably seen the last of Ted Cruz on the national stage. I think that'll just about do it.
He's not likable. That's, to me, the biggest negative. Even if you're not against some of his policies, which, you know, I think he's a little too extreme for me. I hate to even use that word. I disagree with some of his policies. I use a word that gets thrown around too much. But there's something about him that's just not likable.
No.
Guys, I didn't know this was MSNBC. Talk sports, you liberals.
Hey.
Doug, did you ever think you would be hearing that?
No, I'm not a liberal. No, in no way.
In case that needed to be clarified.
Well, I guess I do have some positions that would make me a liberal.
Guns.
Guns, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think abortion, I think I'd be pro-choice, so that I guess that makes me a liberal.
So you would not win the election, then?
Couldn't. You can't have middle-of-the-road beliefs.
No. Not being an NRA guy.
No. Why don't you go to lunch with the brawler and talk about Hillary?
No, not that much of a liberal.
I have more respect for Cruz than what Bernie Sanders did in endorsing Hillary. That's from the Pete Town Bulldog.
A lot of Bernie supporters are really ticked off.
Yeah, really. Correct. I could see that.
And so that's the thing that's what I wonder, because you go, yeah, he's sticking with what he believes. But then he signed the pledge.
All right.
And then they go, well, but then he showed up at Trump's house and did that last night.
That's
the thing. It's not as simple as I don't know. I don't know where I am on it, but I'm presenting all angles.
I think it's quite clear. You don't have to support the guy if your conscience won't let you do it, and I respect that, and I think that's a plus. But you don't have to go and take the stage. And the same thing for Bernie. You know, you didn't. And by the way, when he endorsed Hillary, I mean, he barely endorsed her. He mentioned her name like twice or three times in a pretty long speech. But you don't have to go on stage and
so from that standpoint, what you're saying, in that capacity, I think you would say this, because you would say, as you acknowledge, you lean to the right, that the Democrats are currently playing the game much more effectively, even if you don't like the policies, than the Republicans. Because Bernie Sanders, along with Paul Ryan, I would imagine, was a reluctant endorser of Hillary Clinton.
All right, but it's all, and I don't know how much impact that would have, but it's all, a game, is that, that Trump needs the conservatives. The conservatives didn't like him and railed against him, so he picks Pence, a guy who has conservative credentials. And on the other side, Hillary doesn't have a lot of energy among younger voters, which people say she'll need. She needed Bernie's endorsement, and he sort of gave it to her.
Doug, any jackass can kick a barn down, but it takes a carpenter to build one.
Yeah, Doug.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I don't know what that has to do with what we're talking about, but That's correct.
Matt Carpenter now taking swings off the tee. Good news on that
Very
front.
Good news. Yeah, I think that's what the text had to do with. I signed an abstinence pledge in high school, and Doug, as you know, I had sex 2 days later. That's from the 314.
I wouldn't know that. How would I know that?
Yeah, but you
what the
didn't,
hell is it?
His point is that just because you signed something, but he didn't do it on the convention floor. That's the whole thing.
Maybe Cruz's message would have been better served for him if he'd just done it in a network interview rather than on the stage. There.
How about just not going like the others, saying, I can't show up and support this guy?
This is, again, caller Ellen, who certainly would be on the right. This dumbass campaign gave Cruz too prominent a platform. He should have spoken on the first night, and all would be forgotten. Pence was completely overshadowed. Trump's, quote, nimble campaign team is a disaster. That's from caller Ellen.
Well, I mean,
they spent the first 2 days after Melania's speech saying that there was no plagiarism, and then yesterday, and they had that going on.
In all fairness,
acknowledging that she was a fan of Michelle Obama's and did lift some things from
In all fairness, I don't want to be a Republican apologist or a Trump apologist, but I mean, they had a lot of schedule. They had Scott Baio, and they had the lady from
You're
The
right.
Young and Restless, mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things behind the scenes.
Yep.
I think there's a method to the madness, though. The fact that he's different and the fact that people keep talking about the convention and things are happening there, I think that's all part of the Trump plan.
Guys, I'm playing Acorns on Saturday. Do you bros want to join? That's from Bunchy Donovan's Priest. Talk about we go out there with Bunchy Donovan's Priest and hit the little white ball around at Acorns.
Well, I have an engagement with a little lady known as journalism.
What are your off days?
There are no off days, Tim. I work 7 days
a week. Yes, you have Mondays and Tuesdays off.
I'm here.
No, but I think they meant from television.
Okay, there are no off days. There are no days where I sleep in and say, nothing to do today.
I'm on the same schedule, so don't get mad at me. But when you say that you have a date with lady journalism,
right,
you don't consider this part of that date, do
oh,
you?
Oh, I certainly do.
Well,
you
I
think
seen
we're not
it.
Doing journalism?
Well,
I'm keeping a journal right here. It's called a suspension log.
InsideSTL.com partnering with LouFest this September to provide an exclusive experience for our listeners that include dedicated bathrooms, a lounge area with outdoor TVs, streaming the live show and sporting events, private cash bar, yard games, and of course, we'll be hanging out there as well. For the same price as regular admission, you can purchase 1 or 2 day tickets through InsideSTL.com right now. Enter the password FREEDOTEM. LCD Sound System, Chris Stapleton, Ms. Lauren Hill, Band of Horses, The Big Gigantic, and many more at LouFest September 10th and September 11th. Get your tickets and hang out with us in the lounge area, Doug, at LouFest. Bomber O'Brien's going to be presenting a free shuttle and food and drink specials before and after the show as well. How about that? Take that.
It sounds fabulous.
Joining us right now live from Cleveland in the Republican National Convention, very anxious to get his opinion on what has transpired the first three nights and what he expects this evening when Donald Trump addresses the convention. Ladies and gentlemen, from Bloomberg and from Sports on Earth and co-founder of Deadspin, Will Leach. Will, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Great to have you on. What did you think of Ted Cruz last night?
Well, you know, certainly it was a risky maneuver. I don't think there's any question about that. But, you know, I think that, yeah, you don't go in and do something pretty wild, really. I mean, you really think about the idea of to go in and at the convention, the whole idea of a convention is to get everybody on the same page and moving forward. To go in and do that and to refuse to endorse. And then, you know, this morning he's been giving interviews saying, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. The guy maligned my wife and the guy maligned my dad, and it was personal to me. And so therefore, I really didn't feel like as a man of honor I could go up there and endorse. And I think there's an element of truth to that, but you know, there's also an element of truth that one of the reasons he could do that is, even though not a lot of them might have been in that hall last night, there are a lot of Republicans who do not like that Donald Trump is the nominee for the president. I think Cruz not only is speaking for them, but I think pretty obviously trying to set himself up for 2020. And you know what his bet is, he thinks that Trump will not only lose, he thinks Trump will lose big. And I think that's what he's betting on. He thinks that this is a Trump is like a black swan, one-time event and once to get into the general election, he'll get crushed. And I think Cruz, who is a political animal more than anything else, it's funny, he was he gave an interview recently talking about how, like, I don't agree with Barack Obama on anything, but we both understand smart politics and the way to do things and the way to run a campaign, and that's not what Trump's doing. So I think just as a political animal, he's offended by how kind of slipshod the Trump campaign is, and he was offended by the things he said about his wife and his dad. And so he put himself in a position to, if Trump does lose as badly as he thinks he's going to be set up for 2020. But it's a risk. There's no question there's a risk because, you know, the other side of this is, you know, I mean, there's a lot. The whole idea, Republicans are supposed to be, no matter what. What's the old Ronald Reagan line? First rule of politics is to speak no ill of another Republican. He certainly did that last night. And if Trump wins, but even if Trump like comes close and this is a close race, I think some people will even maybe blame Cruz if he falls a little short. So it was quite a risk. And I got to tell you, it was something to see. It was exciting. It was a really exciting thing. We've seen all this stuff with Melania and the plagiarism and people and Rudy Giuliani yelling and all this kind of weird sideshow stuff. This was a legitimate political moment. Like, this was about politics, about disagreement, and it was thrilling. It was a pretty exciting thing to get to be there for.
Yeah, that was my next question, Will. You're there. You're in Cleveland. You saw it firsthand. What did you see? What did you hear while it became clear that Cruz wasn't going to endorse Trump, and then afterwards?
Yeah, it's definitely not something you expect to see from a convention, to see boos. unless you're booing someone that's not in the hall. So, yeah, it was, you know, you could see it brewing. You know, Cruz orchestrated this in a lot of ways, not just with last night, you know, of course, he had shown his script to Trump, but he also, you know, he'd been very mysterious about what he was going to say and had not openly said whether he was going to endorse or not. And even in the language of the speech, those little moments that seem to creep up to endorsement but then pull back, like he really kind of enjoyed kind of like playing with the yarn with a cat, playing with the string with a cat. He really enjoyed like playing with the audience a little bit. So I think that's what built up to that moment, because it seemed like so many times, you know, Cruz, whatever your thoughts about the guy, he is incredibly intelligent and he loves politics and he thinks so much about this. In a way, it's really the opposite of Trump. And, you know, Trump is just kind of doing this by the seat of his pants. You've seen with just how disorganized this convention has been, the idea that you know, never minding the Melania thing, but, you know, Joni Ernst, who is the senator from Iowa, is, you know, she is basically the future of the Republican Party, someone they really want in prime time. She supports Trump, totally the person they want to showcase. He has problems with women. And they messed up the timing of the speeches, and she didn't go until after the networks moved, and no one really saw her speech. Everyone was out of the arena. So it's been very disorganized. Cruz is a guy that obsesses over details, much in a very similar way, frankly, than Obama and Clinton. They are much more political animals. Trump, part of his appeal is that he doesn't really do that kind of stuff. He just kind of like throws it all together and see what happens. I think you've seen the limitations of that approach, and I think that also led to Cruz doing what he did. But I think you saw in the hall the reaction. The people that are here at the convention, it's worth remembering there are a ton of Republicans, and not just politicians. Like, obviously, the Bushes aren't here. Mitt Romney isn't here. John Kasich isn't here. But even a lot of, like, long-time, beloved, love the Republican Party people did not come to this campaign. So the people that are here at this convention are Trump supporters. So he had to know this was going to happen. But I think, really, he was speaking to people outside the hall. And, you know, you see someone like Rubio, who I think was in a similar position as Cruz, but kind of gave this video, this kind of, like, safe, careful video saying, I support Trump, and see you guys. That was 90 seconds, and I'm gone. For Cruz to go out and really, like, lay his stake down, whatever your thoughts about the guy, it's certainly a more bold move than I think we've seen from really any other Republican politician in this case.
Here's where I disagree with you, because to me, you know, if Cruz is the opposite of Donald Trump, this made him seem very similar in that, you know, Trump is accused of being petty. I think it made Cruz look petty. It's one thing to be true to your conscience and not endorse a guy. It's another to accept, you know, a speaking platform at the convention, and I don't know what was vetted, you know, what he submitted as what he was going to say, but to not endorse a guy and then to sort of take shots in sort of a circuitous way, to me it said it was all about Cruz, and I think it will backfire on him, and I think even people in the Republican Party that aren't Trump supporters will hold that against him.
I think certainly there is an argument that that argument has been made, the idea that if you accept the spot, you should endorse or you shouldn't accept the spot. That said, this speech was, in fact, vetted. You know, I the Bloomberg Politics was circulated this exact speech before he actually made it, which is, if we saw it, obviously the Trump campaign saw it. So and to me, that is another thing that makes you a little worried about the Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that seems pretty baffling to me that you would allow him to make this speech. Every line he said was in that transcript. Like, the Trump campaign saw it. Trump saw it. Paul Manafort, the campaign manager for the Trump campaign, saw it. They all saw it and still went ahead and let him talk. And, you know, and I think that, you know, I think that Cruz may have hit certain lines a little harder than maybe Trump would have liked him to. I don't think there's any question of that. But the idea that the Trump campaign was just completely taken out of left field by this, I think it's surprising. Now, of course, I think it's probably not right. Now, that said, there's also a school of thought that the Trump campaign was doing a little jujitsu of his own, and they knew. They're like, oh, sure, go ahead and say this. And then they kind of go to the New York delegation and says, when he gets going on this, start booing and making him look like an idiot. And I think that's also a very real possibility. I can see that. But to me, you know, that is, it just speaks to the general problem with this convention for Trump, which is, there's no real unity of message. There's no real consistent thing being put out. The almost only message of this whole campaign has been, this whole convention has been, Hillary Clinton stinks. We don't like Hillary Clinton. And listen, if that is, you know, there are obviously lots of people that don't like Hillary Clinton. I think you will whip those people into being inspired to go vote against Hillary Clinton. The question is that's not really the problem. Trump already had those people. What Trump really needs to do, and I think tonight's speech is incredibly key to this, he needs to get out there and say, all right, I know you think it's strange that I'm the president, I'm the candidate. I know this is unusual. I know you have some questions about me. Allow me to alleviate those concerns. That's what Melania Trump's speech was supposed to be about. The best speech of the week has really been Donald Trump Jr.'s speech. That was, without question, the best speech because it humanized, it spoke to conservative values. That was the best speech of the week. But there just haven't been enough of those. They've been kind of like, it's all just kind of like railing and lock her up and all this stuff. And I think it's hard to argue that if there's anyone, never mind just someone sitting on the fence, but someone that wonders whether is that one doesn't like Hillary Clinton and is a Republican, but is generally concerned by the kind of tone that's crept into the campaign because of Donald Trump, this convention has not done much to alleviate those concerns.
I thought Mike Pence was pretty good last night. Do you think he helps Trump's cause at all?
I thought he was terrific last night, but no one's talking about Mike Pence this morning. That is, of course, another part of the problem. Is, you know, the whole point of last night, Pence was great. Like, he was exactly the contrast that Trump needed, in that Trump is this bombastic East Coast guy with, you know, who's been married a few times and has all these kids, and Pence is like, I'm really boring. I'm from Indiana. I'm just a regular guy, and it worked very well. Pence is a very good speaker. He speaks very well to the conservative base, so they like him from that. The problem is that speech went past prime time, and there's no question that once they allowed Cruz to do that, and Cruz, again, being a smart guy, knew that this was going to step all over Pence. I think that's another reason I think people might be frustrated with Cruz this morning, and I think with good reason. But, you know, I mean, this is, again, speaks to how kind of slipshod the Trump campaign has been to allow, like, these 4 days is a free infomercial for Donald Trump and the Republican Party. The next week, the Democrats are going to have theirs. But this is 4 weeks where everybody's talking about this convention. It's nothing but a way for them to sell themselves. Getting the vice president out there to have his big nomination speech and really kind of nail it, that's what last night was supposed to be about. But the minute they allowed Cruz to do that and to even go out there and step on that, they were asking for this to happen. So that's the problem. But yeah, I agree. I thought Pence was terrific last night and could have won. What the Trump campaign really needs right now is for everything to just kind of calm down and it look like just a regular, normal political party. And if you don't like Hillary Clinton, here's a good alternative. And the problem is, I think the issue now is it just kind of looks like they don't have their ducks in a row. And it speaks to generally their lack of a ground game. And like in a lot of states, they just don't have volunteers. Like if you call, I think yesterday someone tried to call the Trump campaign headquarters in North Carolina, which is a key swing state, and there was nobody in the office and nobody doing anything. The Clinton campaign has had people on the ground in North Carolina for 4 years. So I think that speaks to what people's concerns are about the campaign, and I don't think Trump has alleviated them here.
Will Leach is with us. He's live from the Republican National Convention. He is in Cleveland on the appliances counter, phone lines, covering the convention for Bloomberg Politics. A story that I think is rather large, but because there have been so many other bizarre storylines over the last 72 hours, it's not getting that much attention, but it's what's going on with John Kasich in the Trump campaign. Kasich's people telling CNN that he was offered not only the position of vice president, but he was offered to be the most powerful vice president in history, in charge of all domestic and foreign policy in a Trump White House. Donald Trump Jr. was one of the people that, according to the Kasich people, was in talks with Kasich's top advisor, John Weaver. And Donald Trump Jr. said, you know the way I conduct myself. Do you really believe I would say John Kasich is in charge of foreign and domestic policy and Donald Trump will focus on making America great again? What am I, a meathead? what's going on up there with Kasich? Of course, you're in his home state and the Trump campaign.
I mean, it's noteworthy that, I mean, Kasich's not here. I mean, he's in Cleveland, but he's not in the arena. And that is obviously highly unusual, the idea that the Republican governor of the state that's hosting the convention is not appearing at the convention, I think speaks pretty broadly to the discomfort that he has with Donald Trump. And, you know, listen, I think that can get a little overstated. It's not like John Kasich did not run this incredible campaign for president. Like he was like whatever your thoughts about Ted Cruz won a lot of states. He had a lot of support. John Kasich ran for a long time, but he never really had like a ton of votes. So I think it speaks less about the power of Kasich and more just about the general unease that a lot of mainstream Republicans and established Republicans have with Trump, which again is of course a large part of Trump's appeal. A lot of the people that really like Trump like him because he kind of bucks the system, and like him because he doesn't play he's not part of the Bush family and he doesn't really support those guys. But yeah, that was from a Robert Draper piece in the New York Times, that Donald Trump Jr. piece, the idea that Kasich would be running domestic and foreign policy, which is kind of a crazy thought. The idea like it almost makes it look like Trump is like the king and his vice president would be like his prime minister almost. It's like almost a European in a certain way. So which I have to say, all told, you sometimes wonder if that's actually what Trump wants. Like, Trump would rather just be the guy that is the one that everybody likes and puts in charge, and then let the other details be held up by other people. So the problem with that story is whether it's true or not. And listen, Robert Draper is one of the best reporters in American history. So this is not a guy that has a history of getting things wrong or making things up. But more to the point, it sounds true. Like it sounds like the type of thing. Like the reason, one of the main reasons that Trump is winning is Trump is willing to. You know, Trump is fungible. You know, he's a flexible guy. You know, and one of his appeals is that people don't really seem to mind that much. And that's why he's always felt like he had defied gravity in this campaign. He can kind of say whatever he wants and change his mind, even within the same sentence, and no one seems to mind. In a way, and what's one of the reasons he's become so popular, because he just rides that wave in a little bit. And I think one of the reasons people are concerned, particularly a lot of Republicans, is it seems like he doesn't have a handle on a lot of the issues. But to have someone like Kasich, who's a very smart guy, be that vice president and just take care of that stuff while Trump does you know, president type stuff. It feels true. It feels like the type of thing that would be true. So I think that's hurt him, but I don't think it's like so much Kasich sowing discord. I think Kasich, like the Bushes, like Romney, and now, as we see, like Cruz, he just doesn't want any part of Donald. I think their general thought is if Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party, it's not really their party anymore. And I think, obviously, we've seen with a number of people that are here, a lot of people disagree with that idea, but I think we'll find out in the next few months. That's the bet that Cruz made last night, and we'll find out in the next few months who's right.
Well, I think it's safe to say you're a left-leaning guy, a Democrat, so I want to just get your perspective on it.
For what it's worth, I don't know if I would necessarily agree.
Okay,
with
all right.
But go ahead.
All right. If you disagree, then I apologize. But I'm just curious about your take, because I think you're a very, very smart guy. Does Donald have a shot, and is there a possibility that Trump, with all his warts, and I'm not trying to say he doesn't have a lot of them, is it possible that he could end up, if he gets elected, being a decent president? So it's a twofold question.
There's no question that he has a chance to win. I mean, there are two people on earth, whatever your thoughts about Jill Stein or Gary Johnson. I think Gary Johnson, the libertarian candidate, you're seeing a lot of Gary Johnson stuff around here. I think that he's one of the more legitimate libertarian candidates we've had in a while. But there's no question Trump has a chance. You know, I think the statistical breakdowns have come down to right now, heading into the convention, he was about, the lowest he was like 24% to win. Now he's up to about 33, which is, you know, basically, Matt Holliday getting on base. You know, I mean, that's not that crazy. That's not that crazy of an idea. So there's no question he has a chance to win. Whether he has a chance to be a decent president, I think that, you know, there are smart people that will be there to assist him if he becomes president. It's not like the Republican Party is complete. Like, Republican Party has lots of smart people in it, and they have lots of good policy ideas that they think. The question is whether he would listen to them. And I think that the fear about Trump is not that he has these really strong beliefs that people disagree with. It's that people honestly don't know what he's going to do. His policy prescriptions are kind of confusing. They tend to be kind of off the cuff a little bit. I think that, more than anything, it's not like the Bushes and Kasich and those guys are fighting Trump because they just disagree with him on a lot of stuff. They have some disagreements, but it's more just they don't really understand. They don't know if he has the temperament. They don't know if he understands policy well enough to be the president. Now, there are a lot of people that think that would be a very good thing about Donald Trump, that there needs to be less getting in the weeds on policy, and needs to be less like getting caught up in that stuff. And you need someone that more from kind of a gut level. And I think that's certainly his appeal. I think that the question with Trump, if he were to be elected, is how much would he trust in people who have been around foreign affairs and government policies for a long time? How much trust would he put in them, and how much would he just kind of go with his team of people who don't have a lot of experience in this regard? I think that's really the question. But yeah, I don't think, first off, there's no question that he has a chance to win. I think that there's just no question about it. I mean, there's he's a Republican nominee for president. There's no question he has a chance to win. As to whether he'd be a good president, I think that that's something for, if you think that the system is incorrigibly corrupt and absolutely has to be overturned, and there is no way to fix it except someone that just comes in and blows it all up, you should absolutely vote for Donald Trump. And there are a lot of people that feel that way.
Some of what you're describing about his style is similar to the Reagan model, where you have somebody going around doing presidential things and surround yourself with the smartest people you can. And I'm not sure a lot of presidents don't do that. The job is way too big for one guy to know everything about everything that's going on in the world.
If I may say something before you, I think there's something to be said for that, and I'm a major advocate of that. But I think what's transpired with the campaign, and in particular the last 72 hours, why not surround yourself with the smartest people to operate your campaign? And I would say that what we're seeing in Cleveland is indicative that he has not.
Yeah, and you know, I think a difference between Reagan and Trump. Reagan, absolutely, he was not as hands-on as a Barack Obama or a Bill Clinton or a George H.W. Bush, and even a George W. Bush in a lot of ways. He certainly was not hands-on in the way that those guys were. But he had very clear policy beliefs. Like, he had very, like, he believed in trickle-down economics. You know, he had very strong beliefs that therefore he said, hey, smart people, go forth out there and put my beliefs into action. That is, and I think that I agree with you. I think that I think that a lot of people believe that Obama has been too hands-on, and it's kind of led to gridlock and led for to a lot of things not being done. And the thing that he's been hammered on, I think, quite well this convention is the whole red line Syria comment and the leading from behind comment. A lot of people don't like that, and I think that's certainly a reasonable argument. And certainly when it comes to Reagan, I think, you know, we can argue about Reagan, but certainly he that leadership style, I think there's no question it has its appeal and it has its benefits. I think the question about Trump is, what is it actually leading from? Like Reagan said, here are my basic core conservative principles. Now, let me, follow orders. Go out and spread them out. But here is what I believe. And if you have any question about that, refer back to what I believe. The question with Trump is, he seems to have that leadership style, but not actually have a base core view of beliefs behind them. And I think that is what people have concerns about Trump when it comes to Reagan. But I agree. I don't think there's necessarily one leadership or management style that's been proven to be the effective one on either side. And I think that style can work. I just think the concern is whether or not he has the strong belief system behind him to sustain it.
Will Leach with us. He's at the Republican National Convention. He is in Cleveland. He is with Bloomberg Politics, Sports on Earth, co-founder of Deadspin. A final question for you, Will. What are you expecting this evening from Donald Trump when he addresses his convention?
It is funny for all the talk this week of all of Cruz and Melania and everything else. It's going to come down to Trump. You know, it's going to come down to it's a hard balancing act for anyone to stay on to the thing that's appealing to people about Trump, which is kind of this freewheeling nature and a willingness to just go to say whatever and to push the envelope and to not take any junk off of anybody. And then to still ease people's minds and say, hey, can you win this? Are you in control of your campaign? Can you actually go out and do this? And I think the idea, Trump's whole campaign strategy, such as it is rile up the base, get out your base voters. And, you know, all told, that's not the worst strategy. That's kind of how Obama won in 2012 is, you know, he stopped worrying about crossover undecided voters and just got the base out there. And I think that's how George W. Bush won in 2004. There is an argument to that. The problem for Trump is he doesn't necessarily have all that base on his side. So I think the goal tonight, a lot of people say he needs to win over undecided voters. I don't know if there are that many undecided voters left in the country. To be honest, we are a polarized country. Whether it comes to politics or sports or music or anything, we are a segmented niche country. The idea that there's this group of people that be like, Hillary or Donald, well, let's listen to their policy proposals and see which one I decide. I think a lot of people already have their minds made up. The question is, can you rile those people to get up there and vote and get out there and get inspired? That, I think, has been Trump's bet all along. So I think this notion that he needs to go out tonight and say, listen, America, I'm a candidate for everyone. I can be good for all of you, and I'm a regular politician who can speak for everyone. I'm not sure that's the right strategy, and frankly, I'm not sure that's the one he's going to take. I think that, for better or worse, whatever your thoughts about the guy, you'll see the real Donald Trump tonight, and we'll find out in his bet. Listen, we can talk all we want about how the campaign, no one really understands some of the decisions the campaigns are making. It seems kind of disorganized. He's here. He won the nomination, so obviously he must be doing something right. And so I would be surprised to see him suddenly tonight completely shift gears.
Will Leach with us live from Cleveland. Will, always appreciate the time, man. Great to get your perspective on it. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Will.
Of course. And go Cardinals, by the way. Just to make sure I got that in there.
Ring the bell.
Now you're pandering to the base.
Doubleheader. There it is. Will Leach with us on the Ryan Kelly Morning After Live from Cleveland.
Here's where I disagree with him. I think there's a lot of people that haven't decided. Based on the fact that you have two candidates with such high negatives, I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with both. And I think that there is a nice percentage of people that have yet to make up their minds.
Yeah, I think this is about a third of the country diehard Trump supporters and about a third diehard Hillary supporters and about a third saying, you got to be kidding me. This is what we have?
We have news from the producer Bunker, home of the Plowhawk and home of the Sea Monster and also home of our intern Nolan Ryan, who is celebrating his 21st birthday today.
Yeah, how exciting
gentlemen,
is that?
Isaac Bruce is going to be with us in about 3 minutes, but the Jill Cassidy interview is the thing that a lot of people have rallied around and are switching over from 101 for, but we have some news. What's going on?
Unfortunately, we have some bad news.
Sick grandma.
I feel like I'm Walter Cronkite announcing the Kennedy assassination. That was Cronkite, right? The lovely Jill Cassidy sent us a message around 8 o'clock. Unfortunately, I didn't see it until I was on my phone to retrieve Will's number. I guess she was still trying to fly to Vegas and is now on a flight.
It's a 3.5-hour drive.
Back and forth.
And now is, I guess, boarded a flight in our 8 o'clock hour, and now I don't think it's going to land until after the
show. It's a 45-minute flight. When did she board the plane?
Allegedly,
where's one of those guys on Tiger Board who tracks flights?
Pacific time. Allegedly, 6:40.
Okay, I'm going to speak in Central time. So 8:40. She should land.
No, there's something going on.
She might be on the plane taxiing or something when we would want her. And I
or she's
see
not even
on
a plane.
She
okay.
doesn't want to discuss her porn career on the plane.
I have one other idea, though.
And now our listeners are going to go get her on Twitter, and that's an unfortunate thing to watch.
No.
The gentlemen from We Are Live are actually filling in for Frank today. Tim, if you're in the building, maybe we try to get her on from in between 10 to noon.
Well, I love the idea on the surface, but as I analyze it, 10 to 12 is Frank's home, and it's kind of like Ted Cruz showing up at Donald Trump's convention. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Frank necessarily wants adult film stars interviewed in his home.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Sea monster.
Yeah, with that, he was gone.
Is it possible that this has nothing to do with a flight? She's not even at an airport or anything, and she just went back to bed.
Is it possible?
I think it's certainly possible.
Is it possible she keeps thinking about this and thinking, wait a minute, my parents are going to know. If I go on the radio, it's going to be everywhere, and pretty soon they'll find out.
I'm going to say no chance of that. I believe it's a greater possibility that she was out late and she was playing around on Twitter this morning like she was up early when she hadn't gone to bed, and then she got tired, so she went to bed. Maybe had some substances in her system.
Oh, that's a serious charge, boy.
Well, you would think someone trying to get into a career like this, trying to get noticed and be a star, you would take every opportunity you can to get on the media somewhere.
Well, maybe she's not as dumb as some would portray her, and that she realizes that her career has nothing to do with a little AM sports talk.
Whoa. Yes, Seamaster.
The Wolf of Wash Ave making his pitch, texting my phone, please save her for Frank's show, will pinch hit.
The Wolf of Wash Ave. Where's Frank? In the Hamptons?
I think he had some family commitments to take care of today. He'll be back on Friday.
No. I don't know. I think I got to save it for TMA. But I just don't know if it'll ever be on.
I suspect she will
never be on. I would save it for probably next week. We have plenty of time to promote
it. Now you're out of town in New York and Miami.
Coincidental.
Doug, why don't you interview Jill for the 4 Fox on Sports Sunday?
I don't think so. Now, did she say when you were talking with her, Sea Monster, that, hey, the 9 o'clock hour doesn't work. Can we do it earlier before I get on the plane?
Yeah, when she was tweeting like the Dickens
in
the 7 o'clock
hour. If she said things like that, it would make me think that she really wants to be on the show. But
she did position it. I got, it looks like right around 8 o'clock our time. I board my flight at 6:40, so if it's earlier, that's better. Unfortunately, I didn't see that until I was getting our friend Will Leach on the phone.
Well, Doug, it sounds like she wants to come on the show. I think she's going to be on in the 9 o'clock hour.
Well, okay.
Want to place a bet?
I need odds. I need value.
Look, you're a guy who loves the porn. You believe in this girl. I'm going to give you straight up $20. I will give you $20 if she comes on. If she doesn't, you will give it to me.
I can't do that, sir, because I can't say that it's a 50-50 play. I just can't. I can't, Doug.
Then where is your faith in the porn industry, you fraud?
Let's see. I understand somebody just said she just tweeted great song.
Uh-huh.
So she got the Wi-Fi in the plane.
Yeah. I was watching the British Open on my flight back.
Is that like $8 or Southwest? Nah, I don't think she'll be on. No.
Well, Isaac Bruce will be on. That's coming up in a matter of moments. It's the Ryan Kelly Morning After.